Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest this week is the painter and civic activist Robert Shetterly. He's created a series of portraits of Americans, both living and deceased, under the title of Americans Who Tell the Truth, Models of Courageous Citizenship. Portrait subjects include such figures as Martin Luther King and Susan B. Anthony, to Bill McKibben and Alice Waters. To date, there are 238 portraits in this series. Rob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Grant. Very happy to be here.
So let's start with the beginning. Tell me how you started painting these portraits. What kind of painter were you up to that point, and was there something in particular that prompted you to start doing this?
Absolutely. I was not a portrait painter. I had never painted a portrait in my life. I was a surrealist, just about the opposite of what I'm doing now. And if you had told me that I would paint didactic art in my earlier incarnation, I would have said never. But what happened was in the run-up to the Iraq War after 9/11, I was so aggrieved, you might say, full of what Terry Tempest Williams calls sacred rage, and also grief at all the victims there were going to be for a war that never should have been fought, and that this country, especially our press, was allowing it to happen because they weren't investigating the claims that were being made about weapons and al-Qaeda and this and that in terms of Iraq. And I thought I needed either to leave this country or be a better citizen, and I needed to do it through the thing I do best, which was paint. And it took me months to figure out basically a very simple answer to what I should be doing, which was to take the energy of the anger and grief I was feeling and turn it to something positive. And that positive thing involved surrounding myself through portraiture of people that I felt were truth-tellers in this country and had done enormous work to try to make the United States live up to its own ideals.
And 238 portraits is an enormous body of work. When you started painting these, did you ever intend for it to become such a large series?
No. The day I decided to do this, I made myself a little pledge that I would paint 50 portraits. I never actually thought I would paint 50 portraits. I thought I would paint 5 portraits and then they would be in my basement. It would have been a good therapy project for me, and it would be over with. And nobody would ever see them, and I would be able to go back to doing what I'd done before. But after the first couple, I found that I was learning so much from delving into the lives of people like Frederick Douglass or Susan B. Anthony or Jane Addams. I mean, people I knew as names but not as lives. I was learning so much and also learning so much immediately about the nature of our history. That it was fascinating to me. And then when I showed the first few, I was amazed by the response that I had to them. People were moved. They were asking me to talk about it. I never expected that. I thought they would be in my basement and that would be the end of it. And I was so encouraged by the response and also by my own learning curve that I determined that I would paint at least those 50. And then in about 2.5 years, I had 50 portraits, and I thought, I'm just beginning. And I just kept going, and I'm still going.
I want to talk a little bit later about how the portraits have been used in different ways, but let me just stick with this topic here for now. So how are you going to know when you're done? I mean, is there any sense of, like, this collection will be finished, or do you think it's something that you're going to continue doing as long as you are an active painter?
In all of the work I've done previous to this, I often worked in big series of around themes. I like exploring, taking a theme and seeing how many different ways I can look at it. And those series were over when I lost the passion to do it anymore. I realized that to paint anymore would be like pretending to be myself rather than being myself, and because I wouldn't actually feel it. And at this point, I think I would stop painting the portraits when I lost the passion for doing it, because otherwise, it would show in the work then that I wasn't fully engaged, and I'm still fully engaged.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with the painter Robert Shetterly, who's created a series of portraits of Americans under the banner Americans Who Tell the Truth. Well, I want to talk a little bit now about the effect that these portraits have had on other people. And I've had the privilege in the past of seeing some of your portrait subjects talk about the experience of being chosen and then to be painted by you and seeing the painting and becoming part of the collection. And it's been very powerful for them to hear them speak about this. But I wanted to hear about the experience for you and painting. You talked a little bit about this earlier, about learning and doing this. First of all, though, the very physical process of how you paint these people is intriguing. Could you tell us more about how you actually paint these portraits?
Yes, it is. I'm a self-taught painter. And when I decided to paint portraits, and because I'd never done it, I had to teach myself how to paint a portrait. I mean, I knew how to draw and I knew how to paint because I'd taught myself to do that, but never to do this kind of work. So I looked at a lot of other people's portraits just to kind of get a sense of technique. But then I knew, interestingly, in order to do these, I wanted it to be clear that this wasn't, in a sense, about me. I mean, I didn't want my style or stylistic idiosyncrasies to be in the front of it. What I wanted to do was honor the people I was painting. And so I tried to choose a method of painting that was very direct, that was all about the person's integrity reflected in the face, and then the gaze of that person looking out of the painting at the viewer, trying to impress them with how important the issues that that person espoused were or are. And so but the first paintings, you know, they were all 19th century figures. I was going to libraries and finding little black and white pictures and then reading about the person to find out what color their eyes and hair were and making it up.
And your very first portrait was Walt Whitman, correct?
Walt Whitman, yeah. And then I moved from that to gradually into painting living figures and arranging to meet them, talk to them, look at them, think about how I wanted to paint them, then take a bunch of photographs that I could work from. The style I've developed involves building up layer after layer of thin paint, you know, glazing, it's called in the painter's talk. But I do it with my fingers. So the process is almost like being sculptural. I've got my hands all over the person's face. I'm putting on paint and then rubbing it to bring color through, because there's a lot of underpainting, bring the color through from underneath the painting. And it's such an intimate way of dealing with the subjects that it's, I mean, I've said this before, but and it's actually true. I think it's each person I paint, the process of painting it and the intimacy of it is akin to falling in love with a person, which is, to me, what this is about. I mean, I've been asked many times, why haven't you painted the, you know, the people you don't respect? And I can't do that. I can't paint. Mm. To me, painting is an act of love. And to paint, to put out the kind of energy it takes to make a good painting, to paint somebody you don't respect, would I couldn't do it. I have to use that energy to paint people I admire and bring them into focus for me and about why and how much I admire them. And then it also, because of that affection, it leads to the kind of standards I have for each painting. You know, I want to make it the best painting I can possibly make to represent that person and the work that they have done for this country as clearly as possible.
It's interesting just in terms of the tactile nature of what you're talking about and the way that you paint, because as a viewer looking at them, I mean, you know, one of the limitations is we're talking on the radio about something that you have to see, but we'll get to the end about how people can see them. But there's a three-dimensionality that I saw looking at them. Now you've explained to me where that comes from. It's interesting.
Well, part of that is with the people, I always pose them in a kind of natural light where there's a light and shadow, and using so that there is a movement of light across the face. I mean, I'm looking at your face right now. You've got light on your right side, and it's moving across to your left side. And if I were painting you, I could use that light, you know, to describe the volume of your face, and then hopefully also then to use it to express something about character. And so that's what I look for.
So this is an impossible question. I know that you probably hate being asked it, and you've been asked it before, but I'm going to do it anyway. God forbid, let's imagine that, you know, there's a fire in your room where you store all these, and you've got the ability to run in and pull one out. All right, so you've got which is the one out of the 238 that is so important to you that that's the one you'd save?
Wow, I've never thought of it quite that way. That would be very tough. I don't know. Maybe I would just grab the one I could grab. But okay. I would. There's a painting that I almost always talk about when I begin a conversation to school kids, because this is now gets me in front of kids an awful lot, and that's our focus, is getting in front of kids. I almost always begin a conversation talking about Sojourner Truth.
Okay.
You know, the woman who was from New York. She was a slave. When slavery ended in 1827 in New York, she was freed, and she was not, she was Isabel then. She wasn't Sojourner Truth. But each painting is not just a painting. It's got a quote from that person scratched into the surface of the painting to give you a sense of why that person is looking at you. And Sojourner Truth's quote says, "Now I hear talking about the Constitution and the rights of man, and I comes up and I takes hold of this Constitution, and it's mighty big, and I feels for my rights, but there ain't any there. And then I says, 'God, what ails this Constitution?' And he says to me, 'Sojourner, there is a little weasel in it.'" And to me, she has stated the problem exactly about the issue of this country having set the ideals it has had and then run away from them. I mean, people in power having run away from them. And that the chasing of that weasel has been the work of activists, you know, ever since the Constitution was written. And the forms that it takes are manifold. But that, to me, is essential in understanding the nature of power and then the nature of how important it is for those who are marginalized, like Sojourner Truth, then to do the work that makes the country honest, you know, to bring us back into a position where we're walking our own talk.
And is there a living subject that you painted that the experience of painting him or her has stayed with you the most? Was there one experience of actually doing the painting and interacting with that person in that moment that is the most vivid memory that you carry with you?
Well, I don't know if I can answer that. I mean, I've painted now over 150 living people.
Yeah.
Every one of them is a very intense experience. I mean, I go, I choose the people. I mean, this is, you know, I've got this title, Americans Who Tell the Truth. It sounds a little presumptuous. But I choose the people. It's very subjective. But then I choose them because I have such admiration for what they do. Where I don't know if I could choose. I really can't. I can't choose one. I mean, I'm so impressed with all of them. And actually, for me, interacting and meeting with them and then actually becoming part of their, I become a almost like a mouthpiece, a megaphone for their work. One of the, this, by the way, I don't know if you could say this right now, but all the people I paint who do this important activist work, most of them do not get invited into schools. Because this is an art project, often educators see this a little differently. That they invite me in because it's art, and then I can speak for the person who's not invited in. And it gives me an access, and it gives them an access that hasn't been available otherwise.
You're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Robert Shetterly. He's a painter and a social activist and the creator of a series of portraits under the title Americans Who Tell the Truth. So we talked about this in the first half of the program, but you know you're painting these to make a statement about American democracy and American civic life, about our civic responsibility, and most importantly about civic courage. You know, as I heard you. So who are you painting right now? Do you have who is under construction at this point?
I am painting right now a woman named Regina Jackson. She's the director of a youth center in East Oakland. It's called the East Oakland Youth Development Center. This is usually the people I paint don't have a close connection to me personally. I mean, I'm enamored of the work, but I don't usually know them in advance or have that kind of history with a person. I try to develop it, but at this case, 40 years ago, my father, as a businessman in Oakland, California, was instrumental in starting the Youth Development Center in a very poor and, you know, a ghetto in East Oakland, trying to do something for that community and do something in terms of education and development and jobs for kids who had been very left out in our society. The work there has continued for 40 years. Development Center has grown and grown, largely because of the vision of this one woman who has been there for 35 of those 40 years and has become both just a guiding light for an enormous number of young people coming out of that community where they were not being respected, had a very blighted sense of what their futures would be. She has, through the work she does, turns that around. And I went out there to celebrate the 40th anniversary of this youth center and spent a day with her and was so impressed with the work she did and how, I mean, what I want to do with the portrait is make other people aware of what she does so that then it could be replicated in other places. And that's one of the missions of all the portraits is to give a bigger platform to some of the issues and the people.
Well, let me ask you a question more about that, because you've talked about the paintings being in schools and then the effort that you just mentioned about, you know, in instigating other efforts of the kind that this woman that you described is doing. Give me sort of a more general sense of what had been done with the paintings and how ways people have interacted with them. I mean, I saw one a few weeks ago here at the university, and you might want to talk about that event briefly and how it fits in with the story of the portraits, but where drama students acted out their interpretations of individual portraits that they had chosen. And it was, frankly, one of the most powerful things I've seen here on this campus in terms of student activities. But tell me more about how they've been used.
I'd love to. The subtitle of Americans Who Tell the Truth is Models of Courageous Citizenship. Right. And when we first started this project, I thought just the existence of the portraits themselves was the educational project, that people would see it, they would get the idea, they would want to know the stories, and they would maybe be encouraged to act more like the people in the paintings. After a while, we realized that it needed to be something more than that, that we had to actually make it much more proactive in getting into schools and asking people to respond to them. What you're just mentioning that happened here at Syracuse University has been going on for 6 years, where in response to the paintings, original music has been written, drama has been done, dance has been done, the writing students have written about them. We have talked and explored the meanings of the quotes in terms of their accuracy and their history and their efficacy for changing, you know, social situations. Enormous amount of ideas have been used in response to how to get some collaborative meaning out of the portraits. There's been no end to it. I often work in groups from actually little kids to adults and sometimes in mixed groups where we look at my paintings, we discuss what they're about, and then every person in the group makes a self-portrait and then writes on their own quote about something they care about deeply or would like to see changed in our society. And then one by one, people stand up in a group and show their portrait, read their quote, and talk about what this means to them. It's an incredible thing because it begins a conversation where people are displaying or exposing feelings and ideas that they usually don't with other people. Deeply held concerns, deeply held beliefs, things that they're fundamentally upset about. It allows a kind of openness of conversation about where we are at this moment and where we'd like to be. And a lot of them often involve questions around race, which is such a deep conversation that needs to be had in this country. So that's the kind of thing that happens. And it just the only limit is the limit of the imaginations of the people who encounter the portraits.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is the painter and activist, Robert Shetterly. All right, so I'm a political scientist. I'm going to ask you sort of a political science question about these. And it sort of has an embedded potential criticism. So I'm curious to see how you're going to react. But I think it's fair to say that the portraits as a whole, and focusing on the portraits of people that are still living, are mostly on the left, not exclusively, but mostly. Have you ever thought about trying to find more moderate and conservative voices who are telling the truth? I mean, someone who's been in the news recently that comes to mind, for example, might be General Michael Hayden, you know, as a subject for your portrait. And have you gotten that criticism before of, hey, you know, there's too much of an ideological bent to this?
I have gotten that criticism. And I don't think of this. I mean, I'm not trying to squeeze, you know, wiggle out of something here, but I actually don't think
it's
about
it. Been done on this show before.
let's put it this way. I don't want to wiggle out of something.
Right. Okay.
What I want to say is I don't think of this in terms of left and right. To me, human rights, social justice, equality, those kinds of questions are not left and right questions. They're human rights questions. They're essential questions that if we want to actually have a democratic society, everybody has to care about those things because we can't exclude some people to make other, you know, some people more equal than others. I mean, obviously, there's great disparity between, you know, people's innate talents and this and that, but they have to be treated equally. And what I see is that, you know, way too many people are accepting of the power dynamic that's set up in our society where power is able to write the laws, to control the politics, to do this and that. That's not good. It's not good for them. It's not good for the victims of it. But it's also it destroys a democratic society. But to me, this is not left and right. I just don't accept that. I think that, you know, treating people – I mean, if you look at the things that I've focused on over the years, which are civil rights, women's rights, workers' rights, children's rights, environmental rights. I just don't see them in those terms. Mm. You know, I see them as, I mean, like today, to say that taking care of the environment is a left and right issue is totally wrong. Mm. It's a question of facing reality and deciding whether you want to survive on the planet or not. It's not about EPA standards and who gets to make them. So that's where I come down to that.
Have you ever had a little bit of a cheeky question, but have you ever painted someone and then their life took a turn and you're like, oh, wait a minute. do I want this person under this banner? I wouldn't ask you to name names, but have you ever had sort of a painter's remorse?
I have been, let's put it this way, I've been saddened at okay. times by things that have happened to people or they've done after I painted them or things I learned about that were previous to the painting that I didn't know about. But it's something important here that's very important, actually, is every one of these people I paint is just like everybody else. They're human beings with flaws. And that is actually the good news. Because what I don't want to do is by painting this, and this is a danger, is to put people on a pedestal and say these are better than other people. Mm. They're not better than other people. They've had moments of doubt, confusion, mistakes, and then a moment of courage where they actually stood for something. That's what I'm asking for, is for all of us to, when we see, find ourselves in a situation where something is being asked, that we meet that by doing the courageous thing, the morally courageous thing. And if that is a thing that, I mean, I've painted people because of one action they've done in their lives, that they haven't spent their lives being an activist. Some of the people have, but others have done one thing. And that has made all the difference. And if the rest of their life is a total wreck, that doesn't concern me. I'm not judging those kinds of things. But I am saying, I mean, look at, there's someone like Barbara Johns, who was, in 1951, she was a black girl going to a separate and very unequal school in Farmville, Virginia, who led a walkout of her school, and her case, you know, what she was demanding was not integration, but separate, but really equal. She wanted a good education.
Genuine equality. Mm.
And what happened is that, and there's a long story here with a lot of history to it, but basically that case then, when those black kids would not go to that school until they were given a better school, that case led to being one of the central cases of Brown versus Board of Education. She was not an activist after that. You know, she became a librarian. She had five kids, and then she died young. But the courage of her to, you know, demand from a white superintendent a separate and really equal school had such power in this society. Whatever else happened in her life doesn't concern me at all, except, you know, I'm interested. But it's that one thing that she did stands for everything else.
We've only got about a minute or so left, but I wanted to ask you this question about life choices, because I think you've probably confronted these in an interesting way. And it's a little bit of a cliche question, but, you know, there are a lot of people, I think, especially when they're young adults, and you've talked about how these portraits are particularly meant to speak to younger people and influence them. They struggle with decisions about whether to follow certain deep passions and interests that they might have that don't necessarily for them lead to something they can see as a good earning path for their careers and professional lives. And so they struggle with that versus, for lack of a better word, sort of being more practical about their futures. And those struggles and decisions follow them in their life. You know, they keep wrestling with those and look back at them. I know they've been a part of mine. So, you know, in less than a minute, what advice, given the experiences you've had in deciding to do this portrait series, would you give to people that are thinking about those decisions? And again, just really quick.
I would say whenever possible, follow your passions, because as far as I know, we have one life. It can be an incredible journey. If you play it safe and do the conformist thing, I think you're likely to end up with deep regrets about what might have been. I've made a lot of mistakes with my life, but I've tried to always choose to do the thing that often frightened me because of the unsureness of it, but also excited me because of the possibility. And every time I've done that, it's changed my life.
And just very quickly at the end, Rob, where can people go to find out more about these portraits?
We have a great website, AmericansWhoTellTheTruth.org. It has all the portraits. It has resource material. It has biographies and what you can do with them.
That was Robert Shetterly. Rob, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you, Grant. That's great questions. I love being here.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.